Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Dan Mintz, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of Transportation. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Pete Boyer. Dan, given the composition of the department, which you described earlier, and the various modal agencies, there must be many opportunities for to employ shared services, which you also talked about. Could you elaborate on how the department approaches the use of shared services, but more specifically, how you identify department-wide IT activities that would benefit from this type of a centrally managed approach?
First, it might make sense to talk a little bit about what my goals currently are related to shared services, because I suspect I may take a slightly different prioritization in terms of the goals than a lot of people that I've talked to do. We have a fairly active shared services organization at the department right now. The reason I think we want to do shared services in general is there are three. The first is by having some consistency in terms of how we approach the IT infrastructure activities, we're able to have a more robust security architecture. So one of the issues we have, and I think government in particular has a great responsibility for, is making sure that we have sufficient levels of security that people who deal with this are confident that their information is being protected appropriately. The second is we have to optimize the human resources at the department. The reality is, for all the talk about budget issues, the biggest scarcity we have is talent. There's retirement issues associated with that where we're going to lose a lot of the institutional memory. So the question is, how do we optimize the human resources? When they're focused on things that we can centralize and manage that are activities that are not directly related to the mission, for example, video conferencing, do we need video conferencing worried about by staff in every one of our operating administrations? Or would it make sense to centralize that activity and have them focus on how that operating administration can do a better job of supporting the American citizen and their stakeholders? It makes sense to me to optimize people. The third area is if we do it right, we can have better service level agreements. That is, we can do a more professional job. And if we work hard at it, we can save money. People tend to emphasize that last piece the most, but it's actually not the most important value we bring. We obviously can't spend more money, but that's not what we're optimizing. We're optimizing the human resource, which is the precious resource within the organization. Right now, we're doing desktop and network infrastructure at the department. We have combined information assurance, that is cyber oversight, with the FAA. We do e-government initiatives, if you really think about it, our shared services activities. We also have a number of initial projects related, one related to document management. And the other is we're doing a study with the FAA in terms of how we can bring a more coherent approach to data centers in general. We have a lot of different data centers run by a lot of different parts of the department. And so we're working on how we can best consolidate the management and deal with it more intelligently. The issue you ask is how do we identify department-wide IT activities that benefit from central management, in fact, is a discussion I'm trying to change because that historically has been the approach. That is, what is it now we can centrally manage? And in fact, when you start with that approach, there's a thousand reasons why you don't want to. I think the approach has to be different, and this is the hard part. We have to start with the approach that what shouldn't be centrally managed. We should start with the assumption that anything that is not completely tied directly to the mission should be centrally managed. So therefore, what we're trying to change the dialogue, this is what's going on right now, is let's start by assuming everything should be done centrally. And by the way, centrally doesn't necessarily mean by my shop. We could centralize it in a center of excellence within the department. We could centralize it at our Federal Highways Operating Administration or the FAA or wherever. It doesn't all have to be with me, but we want to centralize it for the department. So let's start with the assumption everything should be centralized. Then look at those things that we have to break out. And we're going to try and change that dialogue. We're having a lot of discussions right now as to how can we take that concept, which everyone has begun to believe in, but then how do we take that and make that a practical process?
Interesting approach. Dan, I want to go back to something that you mentioned earlier in our first segment, which was the move to the new headquarters building. And I think I saw you twitch in your seat when you mentioned that. Could you tell us a little bit more about this effort and how it affected your IT operations? But more importantly, what were the benefits of the move and some of the lessons learned?
So let me take care of that in those three parts. The first is just to give a sense of the sizing. We moved something over 5,600 desktops and phone systems, and we had to move the individual desktops desk to desk. Everyone kept their same extension in both in the old building and the new building. We moved over 40,000 data connections. At the very same time we were doing that, there were something over 700 application servers that were scattered around the old headquarters building. We moved them all for the first time to a central data center out in Frederick, Maryland. So we were doing that. And at the very same time, we were decommissioning the building under the lease terms. The headquarters building, which had been occupied for over 30 years, had to be restored in a state approximately that at the beginning of the lease. All being done at the same time, while we were moving a cabinet-level secretary that had to have constant communications working all the time. It was an impressive process. We reflect on it. We're not quite sure how we got from there to here. In the IT space, the second part of your question, we in effect created a parallel organization because it required so much focus that we needed a group of people that really were paying attention to that. Unfortunately, because you always have limited resources, a lot of the people underneath the management structure were the same people. And so we did have two separate focuses, but we actually, unfortunately, people had to go back and forth between the two. So for a while, we actually were running two different infrastructures, one at the old headquarters building and one at the new headquarters building, both at the same time. It is a compliment to all the people involved and to the employees of the department that we got through it because it made everything much more complicated and people were very, very patient. I think the reasons why are the lessons learned. We tried very hard to be transparent in whatever we did. We tried to treat the management and the staff with the respect I talked about at the beginning of this discussion. They deserve to know the good news and the bad news. And as long, in my opinion, as we kept them informed as to what was going on, they worked with us to make sure it happened. And we treated them all with respect in that way that we knew they'd be trying their best. The other thing in addition to transparency, and if I had one lesson to learn, it's the transparency part. As part of our IT effort, a very detailed project plan mapped out. There's always unknown activities and surprises that occur, but if you don't have the vast majority planned, then everything is a surprise. The other thing is when you're communicating the information by having a plan, you allow people to understand where they fit in, and they appreciated that. It actually had some side benefits in terms of the move. We were in the process of doing a lot of this consolidation that ended up with the shared services organization. A lot of that actually was enhanced. I don't know if we would have been as easy to get all those servers in one building, except that we had to move. The other thing is it created a lot of teamwork between the IT group and the staff across the department. This whole effort it showed that people could work together and do it successfully. And having evidence on the ground is always better than having a philosophic discussion about some gold at the end of a rainbow when no one yet can see either the rainbow or the gold. And proving that it was possible to be successful made the department stronger.
Dan, I understand at one point your department had issued a moratorium on upgrading desktops and laptops with the most recent operating system. Would you elaborate on your rationale for pursuing such a course of action, and what is your current plan in this area?
One of the things that surprised me was doing something that made sense, such basic sense, which was come up with a plan before you do something, caused such a reaction. So the answer is, and I want to emphasize, this had no reflection on the software at all. My issue was we have tens of thousands of employees. We're spending a couple of billion dollars on IT a year. We have mission-critical systems all over the place. My feeling was we should not take a step until we put together a plan. So what I said was we should take a breath. Let's hold up right now. Everything's working okay. There are features that we want to look at that would be of value to us. But until we come up with a transition strategy, I don't want us to move, and I certainly want us to move coherently as a department.
Right.
And that takes time. The building move got a little bit in the way of putting together the transition plan. So we're still working on that. My expectation right now is sometime in calendar 2008, we will put together a plan that will deal with the issues of what we want to do with the operating system and what we want to do with the versions of Office. We'll pass it through our CIO council, and then we'll do that. So we have not yet made a decision. We are still exactly where we were when that came out.
Previously, you'd mentioned the importance of security and information assurance as, you know, one of the key goals in your department. Now, technology has clearly enhanced the ability to share information, but has also made organizations more vulnerable to unlawful and destructive penetration. Could you describe your efforts around encryption of data and specifically your strategy to strengthen the protection of personally identifiable information?
Yes. First of all, and I'll get to the encryption, we have to understand that most of these issues are fundamentally cultural. There was a study done where people called up an organization, and I don't remember right now whether it was private or public, but they called up an organization, and it was people in the IT shop. And the phone call was, "Hello, I'm from the help desk, and we're resetting your password." This is true, that we're resetting your password, and we need your ID and password just to confirm it so we can do the reset correctly. 50% of the people gave it. The point of that being, I don't care what technology you put in place or what protections you put in place or how you do identity management, that is identifying who's signing on or accessing the system. When somebody does that, they're let into the system and they can do anything they want. So the problems are fundamentally cultural. With encryption, one of the things when I looked at some of the problems that have happened across the government, there were at least two or three things that came about that occurred to me when I looked at the lessons learned. So one was just a technology issue, that is, encrypt the data. So certainly everything in particular that's mobile is encrypted now at the department. It has been for some time. We were very aggressive in following the mandate that was given to us by OMB. I thought it was a good one, and we do that now. Second, one of the problems was communications. A lot of times people are afraid to bring bad news. And one of the comments is when you punish the messenger, you end up having no messages. So we've tried to create a culture where we can deal with bad news and deal with the news as opposed to who brought it to us. In some cases, it took weeks or months before the bad information made its way up the management chain. I have a policy that I inform senior management of the department essentially at the same time we report any incident into the Department of Homeland Security, the what's called U.S. CERT, where we report incidents. I have a commitment that I reported to them very shortly thereafter, whether I have perfect information or not, so they're alerted to that. And that's luckily I work for a group of people that are able to handle that kind of interaction. The third thing is an auditing activity. Typically, we put these policies out and we create what I call policy on a shelf. And what I mean by that is we create these huge three-ring notebooks or the functional equivalent of three-ring notebooks on the web. And no one knows which ones are to follow, and we don't check to see if they're actually in place. So one of the things we're doing is we're doing a lot more aggressive job of going back and auditing each of the policies to make sure they're effective. We do a lot of training programs associated with this topic. We have a week-long security conference, which has existed really for many years at the department. FAA does a security conference. We've done a lot more online training and trying to make that more robust.
So, Dan, along similar lines, there's obviously a rise in telecommuting and working from home, and many government employees are accessing IT infrastructure via non-government PCs, which increases the potential for system vulnerabilities. Now, my understanding is that peer-to-peer software applications resting on home PCs is one of the major reasons that increases the security risk. First of all, can you tell us a little bit about what is the peer-to-peer software and what are some of the challenges and benefits represented by these applications and how are you dealing with them?
Peer-to-peer software is software that allows multiple computers to access each other's disk drives as if the disk drives were all connected to the computer doing the access. And like a network, peer-to-peer, because each computer is as a peer of the other. It's a lot of it's used for copying music and things like that, which are other activities that you really don't want to encourage. We've taken a number of steps to try and deal with it. First of all, we have a policy that says you can't keep personally identifiable information or sensitive information on non-government computers anywhere. Second, the software we use that accesses our own systems prevents data from being downloaded on their home computer, though a user who wants to can obviously go around that requirement by just copying and taking it. We're doing education processes to discourage people from doing that kind of activity associated with peer-to-peer work. We discourage people, frankly, from using that kind of home use peer-to-peer software. In addition, we scan for that software on our own networks to make sure that it doesn't exist on the departments. In terms of general use of peer-to-peer software, there are a number of commercial packages that actually use it underneath it. But in my opinion, the general commercial packages that merely do peer-to-peer work are not good applications in general for us to use. The security dangers are much too great related to that.
So your main line of defense here is really the education of the employees and making them aware of the dangers and the policies.
Yeah, that and the final thing is we also have started changing the policy of the department. For those people who are doing a lot of telework, we're encouraging their primary computer to be a laptop, a government-provided laptop. So while we can't afford typically two computers, we can afford the one. And so more and more of the time, the primary computer is becoming a laptop.
What does the future hold for the U.S. Department of Transportation? We will ask Dan Mintz, Chief Information Officer, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.